Thank you all for coming this evening. I thought tonight we could discuss the qualities that we really need to be successful in life. Now, first of all, to be successful in life, we have to know what life is. And here, if we look at things according to the current scientific viewpoint, we're in trouble because scientists cannot give you any clear understanding what is life. Did you originate simply from a random combination of chemicals? And those chemicals originated from who knows where? And can everything about you be explained in terms of chemistry? That question has an enormous impact on how you live your life. Now, most people will say, there's got to be something more to me than just chemicals. You're not taught about that in school. Still, most people have that feeling. There's something non-material about me. Although people have that sentiment, the sentiment doesn't translate into action. In other words, when it comes time to live our life, whatever that is, people act just like they simply matter. In other words, people have no idea about their spiritual identity, their spiritual needs, how to have spiritual pleasure. All that is unknown. So therefore, you have a sad situation in which most people intuitively do not accept the scientific version handed to them, that they're just matter, the product of random combinations of molecules, and those molecules originated from who knows where, out of nothing. Most people intuitively don't accept that. Surveys and polls all over the world have shown that. Most people consider there's got to be something different than chemicals about me. There's something about me that's more than just matter. But if you ask them, how do you act non-materially? And moreover, what is the non-material nature of you? They can't answer. So in this way, you have millions and billions of persons who are forced to act materially because they have no specific idea of their spiritual identity or how a spiritual identity should act. Maybe you would get a deeper insight into your spiritual identity by considering yourself as a unit of consciousness. Here, once again, we have problems when it comes to the current scientific viewpoint. Scientists cannot explain what is consciousness. They have their ideas that consciousness just emanates from the electrochemical reactions in your brain or something like that. Everyone has their religious beliefs. But there's no scientific evidence that consciousness is produced from the interactions of matter. There's no scientific understanding of what consciousness is. And that brings more problems for us. Because everything that comes to us, all our awareness, all our perceptions, they come to us through the medium of our consciousness. So if we don't understand what is consciousness, what is it that we understand? You don't understand, we don't understand the very thing that allows us to be aware of everything. Some of you here are students, some are teachers, some are musicians, some are business persons, but all your activities depend on consciousness. But if you don't know what consciousness is, then how can you truly understand everything else in the world, including yourself? the very medium by which you understand everything is unknown to you. So that means we really don't understand the things that come to us by the grace of consciousness. So there's a lot of ignorance going on in spite of all the technological progress. Yes, the pace of life is quickening every year, and people complain about it. Things are getting too fast. We have no time for ourselves anymore. But no one objects to the things in life that make it fast. No one objects to all the gadgets and gizmos that speed up our life. But people protest about life is getting too fast. But no one wants to do anything about the things that are speeding it up. It's like someone was telling me how maybe 30 years ago in New Zealand, at a time when there was no television, people would just spend their evenings gathering in their living room and just talking. And every living room would have a big book collection. People used to read a lot. Whenever I go to Australia, the Australians, they still joke that. You know, they say, what does a New Zealander do? A New Zealander finds a solitary tree and reads under it. That's the Australian conception. I mean, the fact was, if you have no television, then you're forced to have deeper human relations because you're not being entertained in a passive way. So some people were telling me that. This is what life was like 30, 35 years ago when there was no television. People just had each other. Now life has sped up so much, even the 40-hour work week is uncommon. So, people are so busy, no one has time to deal with themselves. Just think about that. I don't have time to deal with myself. My lifestyle doesn't give me the opportunity to deal with myself. This is a great loss. Because life is a serious thing. Now, first of all, we need the time to understand what is life. Am I matter? Am I spirit? Or am I something else? What's going on? I don't know. What are the alternatives? Everyone here will be, I would say almost everyone here, would object to be treated like you're just matter. The example I like to give is, if we pour some dirty dishwater down the drain of the sink, no one complains. But if we try to pour you down the drain of the sink, you'll be screaming and yelling. Right? But what's the difference between you and the dishwater? Aren't you both just chemicals? He says, no, but I'm alive. What does that mean? So this is our situation. We really don't know what life is all about. We don't know what life is. So how are we going to know how to live life? Nevertheless, things are going on under their own steam. We're busy, we're doing, we're achieving, we're studying, we're acquiring, things, we're acquiring relationships. Our life is loaded up. And if our life is not full of enough things and relationships, then we keep ourselves intoxicated so we don't have to think too much about the gaps in our life. And this way, we hope to have a successful journey in this world from birth to death. You can think of your life, whatever that is, as a journey from birth to death. Now, where are you going? And what are we trying to accomplish? These questions are very important. What will be our standard of achievement? Most people say, well, I want the good things for myself, and I want to do good for others. Unless we know what life is, how can we be sure we're doing good for others? And how can we be sure we're doing good for ourselves? These questions require deep thought. But the way society is functioning these days, no one has time for deep thought. And this is a great loss. If you have no time to think about yourself and deal with yourself. But meanwhile, we're surrounded by so much stimuli. Television, radio, video, DVD, here, there, everywhere. It's getting worse and worse. Most of the gadgets and gizmos, they originate from Japan. So you know what the latest thing that's going to be coming from Japan is? Special transmitters that can transmit into your consciousness. So that it's already happening. They're already there in Tokyo. If you walk by, let's say, a soda vending machine, into your mind is beamed the impressions of hearing a zip-top can open, and then the beverage being poured on some ice. So the vending machine actually projects that stimulation into your brain, and you identify with it. And you think, yes, I need a can of soda. It's already there in Tokyo now. They actually invade your mental consciousness they stimulate your mind so that you actually hear the sound of a zip-top can opening and the beverage pouring over the ice. It's already there. This is the latest invasive technology, which give it maybe 5 years, it'll be here. You know what will happen? First, the people will protest. No, this is intruding. This is this and that. And then after your protest energies wane, then all the stuff comes. That's the way it always is. I remember talking to one of your former prime ministers, David Longhi, and he was telling me this. I met him maybe 5 years ago. He said, you know, those who are in control here, we know that 90% of the people don't want a cashless society, but guess what? They're going to get it anyway. So that's the way it is. You let them protest for a while, you increase the number of channels on television and the number of sports events, and everything will be fine. But he said, not that I, he, of course, he himself was like, I don't approve of all this, but that's just the way it's going on. So then he told me, you know, if you're smart enough to figure all this out, then you should become one of us, become a controller. Otherwise, you know, be controlled. Be content with your sports and your 64 TV channels and get your dole and life will go on. But if you're smart enough to see through this whole system, then be a part of it. Be on top. He said, not that I approve of all this, but that's just the way the world is. You can't fight it. So you might as well just live your life as best you can. So this is the normal way things work. More and more intrusions come into your life. More and more time wasters. You protest at first. No. Keep our life simple. This is too much. This has gone over the top. And then after a few years, whatever you were protesting against, it's here. So similarly, in a few years, expect that technology to come, which beams into your brain all these sensory stimulations, and you identify with them as yourself. It's already happening in Japan, as I said. So, now, how are we going to retrieve our life, whatever that is, from all this barrage of illusion? An intelligent person should be thinking like that. Not that you just live your life, you know, the days come, the nights come, you try to have a good time, you try a little bit every once in a while to figure it all out, and then you give up, and you just want to be comfortable. You want a few good friends around you, you want an understanding partner. Then after a while, you want one or two kids to play with. And then, I guess you get old, God forbid. And what do you do when you get old? I guess by that time you have a batch somewhere. Yeah, that's preferably on the coast, on the headlands. And Yeah, then what happens? After you get old. Is there death? Well, I definitely don't want to think about that. So, can you see your life like this? I hope not, because the persons who come here are special persons. They're interested in exploring another dimension in life, and that's very good, because the kind of body that you have is very, it's designed for exploring another dimension. The human body is specially meant for exploring the spiritual dimension. So we get so much stress in our life by misusing our human body. This is a part of stress management that is not taught in most places. Whenever I'm speaking at universities, I bring out this point that so much of your stress, because students are stressed in a big way these days. They don't know what their job future is going to be. If any of you are students, you know that just because you're studying something at the university doesn't mean you're going to get employed in that field when you graduate. So therefore, you're very stressed. What will I do in 3 or so years when I finish university? What will be my job? That stress is now going down to the teenage level. In the UK, I point this out all the time, that according to recent surveys, 1 out of 4 UK teenagers has stress disorder. You see, it used to be that just the adults were stressed. You know, household pressures, domestic problems, work pressures. So you'd always find a few persons over 30 who were stressed out. Now that age has dropped into the university. University students are stressed. In spite of so much drugs and sex that flows at the unis, the students are getting stressed out. You know, what's going to be my future? Will there be a job for me? Now, that stress is dropping even lower into the teenage years. 1 out of 4 teenagers in the UK is stressed out. The number one reason? They see that if they do have 2 parents at home, the parents have big problems. So this is affecting the teenage kids. And then the second reason is school problems. The pressure is so great. You've got to prove yourself at the age of 14, 15, or 16. You've got to show at that age, can you, you know, make it to the big time? Are you going to be productive? The job pressure is so great. Soon, another 8 years or so, you're going to be hearing about stressed out 8-year-olds. That's the trend of society. The age of stress gets lower and lower. Now, an unknown reason for that stress, as I said, is misuse of the human body. If you have something and you don't use it for its purpose, in fact, you use it for something else, then you're putting stress into your life. That stress is a sign that you're misusing something. Now, it does take a brave person to see this and act on it. Most people kind of see it, but they figure, that's life. After everyone's like that after all, you know. I'm not any special. Everyone's in anxiety. Everyone's flipping out too, you know. Why are you trying to make me seem that, you know, I'm special. Don't put a guilt trip on me. You know, everyone's a bit over the top these days. Right? What do you want, you know? That's all part of it, you know. It's all part of the learning process, being stressed out. What are you supposed to learn from it? Well, I don't know, but it's part of the learning process. I just read in the latest New Age book that it's all part of the learning process. So that's what I say. It's all part of the learning process. You know? No one knows what they're learning, but To look at your life and see that the stress and anxiety is indicating misuse, that takes a brave person. rather than trying to cover over the problem or put a Band-Aid on it, to actually make structural changes in our life. That takes some bravery. So for those who want to actually make the most of their life in terms of spiritual attainment, two qualifications are required. Both words rhyme in Sanskrit, if you know a little bit about Sanskrit. One word is dhira, and the other word is vira. Dhira means to be sober in terms of looking squarely, frankly, and analytically at what's going on in your life, at you. Looking at you in a deep and profound way. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, dhiras tatra namuyati. Someone who is dhira, sober, level-headed, truly, is not bewildered by the changes of the body. The body is always changing from babyhood. It's like we have a baby back there. You can hear. That baby's body will change. Then there'll be old age, after you pass through young adult life, so on and so forth. Someone who is dhira, sober, reflective, who can understand things profoundly, who wants to look deeply into things, that kind of person is not bewildered by the changes of the body. In other words, although the body is always changing, someone who is dhira understands the unit of consciousness, the spirit soul, remains the same. Such a person is not even bewildered by death. Understanding death is simply another change. As Krishna also explains in Bhagavad Gita, jatasya hi dhruva mrityur dhruvam janma mrityasya cha. For one who has taken birth, death is certain. Everyone will accept that. And for one who has died, birth is certain. That sounds interesting. But why? Every night when you go to sleep, basically you're dying to the world. You don't know if you're going to wake up the next morning, but you willingly lay your head down to sleep and lose track of yourself. You ever think about that when you go to sleep? Are some of you afraid even to go to sleep thinking, I don't know where I'm going to be going off to? No, you don't think about it. You let your body go to sleep because it's tired. You let your mind go to sleep because you want to forget. So sleep is like death. We were discussing this a couple of mornings ago in our morning class. You don't know where you're going when you go off to sleep. You don't know where you lose track of your body. You lose track of your mind, your identity, and you get caught up in so many dream fantasies. And then the alarm clock rings, and you wake up. That means you remember. Now I remember who I am. You get that feeling every morning? You wake up. Oh, yes. Have you ever gone so deep into sleep, and when you wake up in the morning, it takes a while to remember who you are? Has that ever happened to any of you? Yeah. Or where you are? Because I travel so much and I change time zones sometimes. If I'm really traveling a lot from continent to continent, some mornings I wake up and I have to think like 10 times, where am I? So waking up means remembrance. You look at yourself, oh, it's me. Right? It's happened to you, right? Or maybe if you partake of various intoxicants, alcohol or drugs, you may, I imagine, sometimes really have difficulty remembering who you are the next morning. Mm. Waking up is remembrance. Going to sleep is forgetfulness. So basically, you're dying when you go to sleep. Think about it tonight as you lay your head on the pillow. I'm dying to this world. And in the morning, I'm going to reincarnate. Then you'll understand why Krishna explains the cycle of repeated birth and death in Bhagavad Gita. That which has taken birth must die. That which has died must take birth. It goes round and round and round. Just like every night, you further the cycle. You go to sleep only to wake up in the morning. Round and around you go, day after day. And then, at the end of life, you go to sleep again in terms of death, and you wake up again in another body. This is called samsara, the wheel of birth and death. There's a very popular perfume now called samsara. Some of you, oh, you have it? You sell it in your store? Yeah. Is it popular? Yeah. Do people know what it means? You don't tell them, huh? She runs the duty-free store on, Willis Street? Yes, yes. So if you want some samsara perfume, you know where to go. She'll help you out. It's not that the manufacturers came up with that name out of nowhere. It's a Sanskrit word, samsara. It means the wheel of repeated birth and death. So you can get some samsara perfume, put it on. Yes, I'm perfuming this body. What will my next body be? Now, to be a dhira, to be sober, to be profound with your vision, you have to face the facts squarely. Am I this body or am I something else? Face the facts squarely. If I'm more than matter, if I'm more than the body, then what is my mission in life? Now, under materialistic circumstances and pressures, it's very hard to think of your highest goal in life. You may try, but it's a very feeble effort. I mean, you have to be practical. If your consciousness is flooded with intoxicants, addictive substances, from cigarettes and coffee on up, and if your mind is always absorbed in fleshy things, you know what that's like. And your mind is always absorbed in fleshy things. It's your mind's pretty steamy, and it's laced. Your mind is laced with various intoxicants or saturated with various intoxicants. And then your mouth is full of the flesh of some creature's body. Very hard for you to concentrate on what is the ultimate goal of life then, wouldn't you say? First of all, it means no mercy when you eat other creatures' bodies, because it's not necessary for human beings to be carnivorous in order to live. In fact, human beings will be much healthier without flesh eating. And then intoxication bewilders you. Some university students were explaining to me how it's a necessary ritual every weekend to become completely wasted. It's just necessary so you can get on with your life. And I said, well, don't you like really feel a wreck the next day, whether you've taken alcohol or ecstasy or whatever? Don't you like a wreck the next day? They all told me, yes, but it was worth it just for that night of pleasure. Any of you used to think that way? Or maybe still do. It was worth it just for that night of pleasure. Yeah, my head is splitting now from a hangover, or I'm so jittery coming down from the ecstasy, but wow, that last night. I even had some teenage girls in New Zealand. I think I was in Christchurch. They were telling me, they were just 15 years old. They said, you know, the most amazing thing when you get wasted is waking up the next morning and not understanding how the person next to you got there.
It's cool.
And you go to school, you go, you know, you go to college the next day, next, you know, Monday, and guess what? I don't have it. I was so wasted, and I woke up in the morning, and it was Paul next to me. These things are going on. So when your consciousness is like that, think about it. Your consciousness is laced, to put it mildly, or saturated with intoxicants and addictive substances. Your consciousness is steamy and passionate and fleshy. You know what that's all about. Or your consciousness is, well, most people have a hard time understanding how meat-eating dulls their brain. Well, just think of the lack of mercy, the lack of compassion. Recently, we had some of our staff here, a few years ago, sneak into one of the freezing works just north of here. What's the big freezing works just north of here? Yeah. So they snuck in, saying that they have to do a report for college, for the Polytech, you know, about the New Zealand economy. And so meat plays such a vital role in the economy. So, you know, normally they don't allow anyone into freezing works these days because they're so uptight because of the animal rights movement. But our staff members are very persuasive and very charming. So the staff at the freezing works thought, oh, these young girls, surely, yes, we'll let them in. So they let them in to film everything. And they didn't catch on. The freezing works people didn't catch on until the end when they saw how uncomfortable and disgusted our staff members were becoming by seeing these cows and sheep just being killed and skinned before their very eyes. So finally the freezing works people, after about an hour of the tour, said, oh, actually, we changed our mind. You know, you should go immediately. Go now. Now. So we got some footage, which we found out is extraordinarily rare, not even available in UK or the USA, because the freezing works for quite some time now have been so uptight about the animal rights movement, they don't let anybody in with cameras. So we searched on the internet all over the world for footage of what goes on inside of freezing works and came up with nothing. So now we have a unique film to show for all those who enjoy that Big Mac. You know, watch the film. You see the step-by-step process of how these animals are slaughtered. The only way you can rationalize it is by not thinking about it. You just put it in your mouth. You don't think, I'm biting into someone's corpse. Like now, what are those billboards you see everywhere? Red meat, feel good. What is it? You eat red meat, feel good. Sounds... I say to people, would you eat your dog or your cat? Ooh, how horrible. How could you say such a thing? To eat my pet. I said, well, then why are you eating the cows, the sheep, all these other animals? Well, that's different. You see, this is what these unsavory, brutal activities do to your consciousness. You can't even think straight. I would never eat my cat. I would never eat my goldfish. You think I am a savage? But, you know, yes, go to the supermarket. Get, you know, some, you know, piece of a cow, a piece of a sheep. Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, go ahead. No problem. So this affects your ability to think straight. Once again, the consciousness is laced with intoxicants. You know, even coffee, addictive. You know coffee's addictive. Or cigarettes, drugs. You can't think straight. And then think about what it's like when your mind is steamy with passion, you know, really fleshy. You can't think of anything high. You can't think of anything grand. You're just like, you know, on the real bestial platform. Then add to that gambling and you've ruined your life. You know, is anyone here? You ever been to a casino? Anyone? And got into it? It just takes over your mind, right? And there's people there, they're totally into it, the money's just flowing, the roulette wheel is spinning, or the slot machines, and it's just like another universe. So, these four activities, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling, they destroy your possibility for living a sane life, a thinking life. There's no question of being sober, dhira, as the Sanskrit word says. You won't be concerned with your vital questions. So that's one thing. Then there's another Sanskrit word, vira. Vira means heroic. In order to actually make the most of your life, you have to be a hero. You have to have the strength to stand against the current. And most people, they can't do that. Well, look, I know people don't know what they're doing, but, you know, everyone's doing like that. What, you know, why do you expect me to go the opposite way? Why do you expect me to take the path never taken? Everyone's just acting in ignorance, so it must be all right. How many of you have heard from, if you went to church, how many have you heard from your minister in church? How many of you heard from your teachers in school? How many have heard from your political leaders, your government leaders, that you should understand your identity? Are you the body or are you something else? You ever heard that? From any pulpit, from any government ministry, from any high college teacher, any university teacher? Students, you should understand today, are you matter or are you something else? Your whole life depends on this. Have you heard that? Has your prime minister announced that to the country? The utmost necessity for our people is to understand who they are. You ever heard that? No. So, therefore, this pressure to conform in ignorance is so great. This is what's pushing you, and you should be wary of this. No one likes to be pushed around. If you're walking in the hallway out here and I just come up to you and give you a push, you're like, hey, what kind of place is this? I mean, this is, you're really rude, aren't you? And I go up to another person, you'll be shocked. But all day and all night we're being pushed around by materialistic stimulation, and no one protests. Your senses are being bombarded with messages at every moment through the media that you should just act in this way, act in that way. And then we get around our so-called friends, our mates, and they're pushing also. Yeah, you know, I did this, I did that, I was so happy. And then you think, yeah, maybe I should do this or that. Just like our duty shop manager, duty free shop, she can tell you, you know, people come into her shop with expectations, and she feeds their expectations. She tells them, this is what everyone's buying. Right? Yeah, see, this is, yeah. So, because people are uncertain a lot of times, like, I got to get a gift real quick for someone, what do you think? And she'll always, she knows how to instantly come up with something. This is the latest thing. And she, of course, she always picks the most expensive thing in her shop. This is it. This is what the people are into now. And then the buyer feels confident. Oh, thank you. Actually, thank you, don't they? Thank you for tuning us in. Thank you for alerting us to the pressures that we should be feeling. Nothing like having a friendly, duty-free shop owner in our city alerting us to all the social pressures we should be feeling. That's exactly what goes on. So not only is there pressure, but we like it. We want to know what's the latest conformity. What are the pressures that I, as an upstanding person of today, should be feeling? In other words, I don't want to really think about myself. That pressure you don't want to feel. So it's a hard job to wake people up. Therefore, someone who actually wants to be Krishna conscious, they have to be a bit heroic. They have to be willing to swim upstream a little bit. Now, what is your reward for being Dhira and Vira? Being sober, analytical, deep thinking, as well as being heroic. Your reward is that you won't live your life in ignorance. You'll understand yourself as spirit, unit of consciousness, and more than that, you'll understand the Supreme Self. It's not enough simply to understand yourself as a unit of consciousness. We need to understand the source of all the units of consciousness. Since you, as a tiny unit of consciousness, are personal and individual, what's wrong with anticipating that the source of all the units of consciousness is also personal and individual? You'd have a right to think in that way. You'd be surprised, though. A lot of people speculate another way. They think, I've suffered so much in life as a person, as an individual, so perfection must be impersonal, because all the personhood and individuality that I know about means suffering and limitation. So I've got a big idea. The supreme, ultimate, the highest of truths must be impersonal, because everything personal and individual we've seen has always been problematic. My life as an individual person has been problematic. Therefore, spiritual perfection must be impersonal. Then there'll be no problems. Many people speculate like that. Therefore, when we speak of Krishna, they shirk a bit. Are you trying to say the ultimate source of everything, the supreme absolute truth, is personal? They get nervous. Krishna explains that nervousness in Bhagavad Gita. He explains that such persons are afraid of having an eternal identity. You see, if your identity is just temporary and you're suffering, you can always just tell yourself, I'll only be existing for a short time and I'll disappear. I don't really have to deal with myself. But if you have an eternal identity, that means you better get on top of yourself and deal with yourself because you're going to be around for a while. But that frightens a lot of people. You have an eternal identity. Oh, boy. I got a lot of homework to do. I mean, I'm going to be around for a while. This is what Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita, that your eternal identity is there even though you changed bodies one lifetime to another. You can practice your analytical vision by going around the city, or especially going to the zoo. Sometimes I go to the zoo here. I haven't been in a few years, but I should go. There's good weather. Go to the zoo and just look at all the animals and think, I could be in that body. Try that. That is a fact. So the body is always changing, but you as the unit of consciousness, you remain the same. You're not disturbed. You shouldn't be disturbed by the changes of the body. Since you're going to be there, although the body always changes, you should get to know yourself as spirit soul, as the eternal unit of consciousness. But there's no education in society for doing that. That's why I was speaking to someone maybe yesterday or a few days ago. The best birth control is do not bring a child into the world unless you can enlighten that child. If you cannot enlighten that child into the depths of why we're living, then don't have children. This is the Vedic system for birth control. Better than dropping pills and using various plastic substances, just don't engage unless you can enlighten the child that results in the deepest spiritual knowledge. If people would take that responsibility, then you would see a population of very elevated children. Because the children that are born, their consciousness, their level of consciousness depends on the consciousness of the parents. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita, that according to the consciousness of the parents at the time of conception, a certain quality of child is attracted to the mother's womb. So the actual problem of the world is not the quantity of the population, it's the quality of the population. But no one thinks about it in that way. Because the quality of the population is so low, there's such an impact on nature. But if people would learn how to live in a quality way, then nature would not be impacted to such a dangerous degree. So the future of the world actually depends on the parents. If the parents know how to call into the world high-quality children, you'll see a change. But if the parents simply know how to have fleshy, steamy, intoxicated, slaughterhouse gambling consciousness, what kind of children do you expect? And then everyone complains about the world. What's the world coming to? Oh, my God. Violence everywhere. Terrorism, this, that, the other. It's happening in New Zealand also. One of my students from New Plymouth, she told me her brother was bicycling home in the evening, oh, maybe about 8, 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock at night, New Plymouth, no big deal. He was cycling home, guy's about 16 years old, and one car came along, cut him off, and then, a drunken young man jumped out of the car with a knife, screaming, "I'm going to kill you!" Didn't even know the person. Stabbed him and just grazed his liver, and, if he hit the liver, he would have been dead, but, he had to go to the hospital, and so, the police caught the persons, charged him with, they pleaded guilty to attempted murder. They didn't even know. Probably taking crystal meth or something and just driving along in the car and, let's kill this guy. Jumped out and, it's horrible. So these things are happening. So people complain, what's happening? What are things coming to? What are the young people doing? As if the old people are all, saints. What's happening to the younger generation? Oh, my God. It's the older generation that gave birth to the younger generation. They planted the seeds, and now the seeds are growing. And it gets worse and worse with every generation because no one knows what they're doing, in case you haven't noticed. No one knows what to tell their kids. Just think, what's the best thing that you could tell your kids? Or what's the best thing your parents probably told you? Just try to be happy in your own way. Don't try to hurt anyone. That's the best you've heard. Or follow your dream. We want to back you. We want to support you as you follow your dream. That's it. Otherwise, everything is wide open for you to do whatever you want to do. Another of my students, her mother was very opposed to her practicing Krishna consciousness. She started when she was 16. When she was 16, in college, she would start asking her college teachers, what is the meaning of life? who are we? Are we this body or something else? What is consciousness? And her college teachers, you know what they told her? They took her aside and said, you're asking questions like this because you're a teenager. When you get older, when you become an adult, you'll understand that you don't ask questions like this. Yeah, the true story. True story from Auckland school system. So, not Wellington, of course. It would never happen here. So, her mother was getting quite disturbed. Oh, no, my daughter is getting into some unknown spiritual things. You know, hanging out with strange persons who don't do the things everyone else does, you know. They're not eating meat. Oh, maybe my daughter's going to suffer malnutrition. she's not going to parties anymore. And, you know, what's happening? So her mother put up quite a scene. Her mother wanted to send her back to her father, who is in Zimbabwe. Well, he was a cattle rancher in Zimbabwe. We'll send her back to Zimbabwe in Africa. We'll get her away from these people. But gradually the mother started to calm down. Her new husband was telling her, he was giving her the liberal line. You know, just let your daughter grow in her own way and let her follow her dream, whatever it is, and you just give most of your attention to me. And So, about 3 years after that, the mother came to see me. And by that time her daughter was about 19, doing very well, very spiritually vibrant, glowing, full of spiritual knowledge. And so I said to her mother, aren't you glad that your daughter took this route instead of she could have become into drugs, or she could have been, pregnant with abortions, this or that? And the mother just looked at me and said, well, if she had gotten into drugs, if she had gotten pregnant or abortion, that's just all part of life. It's just all part of the learning experience. What could I say? What could I say? This is the sign of what's going on these days. Everything is whatever you want to make it. And somehow that you're going to learn. But we don't see anyone learning. It's not possible to learn when our consciousness is affected by these negative activities, particularly those four activities I've mentioned. When your brain, your mind is fleshy and steamy, laced with intoxicants, or saturated with intoxicants, your mouth is full of flesh, what can you do? And then if you happen to be absorbed in casino consciousness on top of that, you're gone. But that is the best that civilization can offer these days. And therefore, you don't have any spiritual mobility in the true sense. People say, well, I believe in God, I don't believe in God, or maybe, maybe not. No one has any experience, because they don't have the space in their life for cultivating spiritual activities. Therefore, we have to start inspiring people to be truly heroic, to find the time and space in their life for cultivating spiritual activities so they can experience the spiritual energy. That is the Krishna Consciousness Program. Not belief in God, not just stamping yourself with a religion. Well, I'm this. What are you? No. Let us inquire whether there are actual techniques for experiencing ourselves as a unit of spiritual consciousness and part of the supreme spiritual consciousness. That is what Krishna consciousness is about. Then life reveals itself for what it is. The human life especially is meant as a chance to attain the highest spiritual levels. Only that can be done in the human body. Other bodies, they're not good for this kind of thing. You don't see them attending this gathering. You don't see any elephants and cats and dogs and giraffes sitting attentively listening. Humans do that because they have this gift of higher consciousness. But if we misuse that gift, then we're stressed out, full of anxiety. Oh, I'm doing so much. What to do? How am I going to cut down? Oh, I should do less. But I don't know. I don't want to do less. I'm on the verge of being successful. It's almost going to all work for me. I know. I can't take it much longer. But just wait a few more weeks, and then I think it's all going to work. I mean, you know, that promotion I'm wanting is going to come, I think. I think I'm really going to get this. I'm really going to get that. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. Just wait till I get a new relationship. I think this one will work for me. I learned a lot from the last busted relationship. This one, I think, yeah, this is going to click. There's always that ongoing immersion in false hopes. So we have to kind of break that addictive process of false hopes and look at life clearly. Then we can begin our spiritual climb in Krishna consciousness. We explain how Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, dhiras tatra namuyati. Those who are actually dhira, sober, deep thinkers, profound thinkers, analytical, they think about these things all the time, and they're ready to make a solution to these questions. They're going to shape their life. They're going to live their life in terms of grappling with these questions so they can get the highest pleasure. You see, finally, I'll point out, there's no pleasure without facing reality. But people do anything except to face reality. They want to run from it, and they think that'll be relief, that'll be peace. But if we actually face reality, then we have a chance for real pleasure. And that is the purpose of Krishna consciousness, to face the basic issues of life and then move on to the spiritual platform in Krishna consciousness. Then we can understand what true pleasure is. True pleasure is far from the world of matter, far from the illusion of material misidentification. So we have a lot of work to do, and the rewards for those who want to be heroic are vast. So please think about that. Those two Sanskrit words that rhyme, dhira and vira. To be a deep thinker, to be profound, and also to be heroic. I'll take a stand. Everyone's going one way. It doesn't make sense. I'm going the other way. I remember as a student in the USA during the anti-war student protests, because all the students were just freaked out that, you know, as soon as they left the university, they'd have to go into the army and be sent to Vietnam. And if you didn't go to the university, as soon as you left college, you had to go into the army, so we were always protesting. So I remember, I saw one big picture in a newspaper. The students, they were demonstrating at the army place where you had to go to register for the military conscription. You had to get your number like that. Not that you were being inducted, but you had to, you know, just like here, you have to, you know, sign up for the vote. I get so many letters in my post box. If you're eligible for the vote, you must fill out this form. I saw this picture at this place where the students had to go to register for the army, and they were all having a sit-in demonstration. They were sitting on the floor and blocking any access to the registration window.
Yes.
So, as they were sitting there, this super patriotic student came, and he was running over the tops of all the students who were sitting down, like, and with his pen and application in his hand, like, "I'll sign up. I'm a lover of my country. I'll sign up." He just literally was running over the tops of all the students sitting down on the floor, blocking access, and with a big, eager look on his face. And so the camera member there, you know. So that's the wrong kind of hero. I'll never forget that look on his face, like, "I don't care that all these students are protesting. I'm ready to sign up to go to the jungles and fight." And he had a big button on his chest, you know, "America, love it or leave it." So it shows you people have this tendency to want to take a stand for something. Now, with our human form of life, we should take a stand for becoming enlightened, for becoming Krishna conscious. That involves some lifestyle restructuring, some tinkering, some engineering of the way we spend our time. But certainly, we can move from darkness to light, from ignorance to knowledge, in a very wonderful way, and then we can truly help others. Any questions? We covered a lot of ground tonight. Yes, very deep thoughts, because you're very deep people. Our guests who come here, they're not ordinary. You can consider yourself to be the best of Wellington. It's a very special thing coming here. Actually, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, after many births and deaths, someone gets the urge to start thinking, "Let me go find out what's going on," after many births and deaths. So your coming here is not just the result of, you know, an immediate decision. Your coming here is the accumulation of motivations from a whole series of births and deaths. It takes a long time to get to the point of wanting to make some deep changes for the purpose of becoming Krishna conscious. It takes a long time. But now you're here, so think about it and see if you can take up a program of connecting your senses to spiritual sense objects. That's what we're offering here. Spiritual sense objects for your purified senses. That is real yoga. Real yoga is not simply stretching muscles and losing weight. Real yoga means to connect your purified senses to spiritual sense objects. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. All right. So, unless you have some questions, we'll do a bit more chanting. I realize I gave you a lot to think about tonight. Oh, yes. This is our friend from Seoul, Korea. Yes? I spent a lot of time in Seoul, Korea. Yeah? Go on.
How does population grow?
Mm-hmm. You see, when you deal with the population of this Earth, you're not just dealing with the Earth planet. Why should you think that there's life only on the Earth planet? In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that the characteristic of the soul, the unit of consciousness, is that everywhere there is life. The unit of consciousness can appear anywhere in the universe, on any planet, in so many different types of bodies. So, why should you think only Earth has life?
Why do they all come up to the Earth?
Hmm?
Why
What makes you think they only come to the earth? Ah, but you don't see what's going on in other places. You're just looking at a limited situation. And you don't see everywhere on the earth. You don't see all the different dimensions possible. And there are also countless other universes. Krishna explains all that in Bhagavad Gita. So you don't know who's coming from where to where, because your senses are limited. Just like if I can only see this room, I'll say, well, where did all these people come from? I don't know anything outside this room. But you know, you'll say, well, they're coming from Wellington, for the most part. But if I just see this room and don't know anything beyond this room, I'll just say, where did all these people come from? So it just depends on how wide your vision is, how much you know about life, how life pervades the universe, how there are countless universes. Each universe has countless planets. I'm just editing or revising a book I wrote 6 years ago called Searching for Vedic India. Right before the book was published, I think in the year 2000, I did a count of how many new extrasolar planets that astronomers have come up with. When I first started writing, in 98, it was 25. By the time the book was published in 2000, it was 45. So at the last minute, I changed it to 45 before the book went to the press. Now, time for revisions. I just checked the number of extrasolar planets that astronomers have discovered is 126. So, what do you know about those planets? You just have to rely on what you can see. If your vision is limited, then you won't be able to see everything that's going on. There can be other dimensions on this earth that you're not aware of. For example, do you know how much evidence the U.S. government is hiding about so-called aliens? Do you know, like, the brightest scholars and space engineers in the USA will testify publicly that they know the government's holding back because the government's afraid that people will be terrified? I have in my possession, maybe some of you heard of Roswell in New Mexico. I have right in my possession the original article put out by the military saying that they had discovered a crashed flying saucer with dead bodies of aliens put out by the major in the military. And then the next day, the article was published to the contrary. It was just a weather balloon. I have both articles. Both of them from the military. And that happened back in the 40s. Ever since then, they deny it. But you can go and get these articles. You can search the newspapers. You'll find the original, which said, a major in the Army saying, oh, I can't believe it, but this is what we saw. Next day, all denied. So there's so much going on we don't know about. Yes?
I'm sorry, I was trying to. I was just going to ask, so through Krishna consciousness, can you gain a greater awareness of the other dimensions? Like, what kind of experience can you gain from these other dimensions?
That's all explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and also in the graduate study, Srimad Bhagavatam, the different dimensions of life in the cosmos. But actually, a Krishna conscious person is not interested in sightseeing in the world of matter. A Krishna conscious person is interested in beyond the world of matter, the spiritual world. Everything in the world of matter, no matter what dimension, is temporary. It's limited by time, space, and thought. But the Krishna conscious person has his or her vision set on the spiritual world, where there's pure consciousness, no effect of time, no limitations. So, still you can read about these material dimensions. Information's available. some mystic yogis, as they elevate themselves, they want to take the slow train. They want to take a stop through all the different dimensions of the material cosmos before leaving. That's dangerous because you could become attracted to some temporary material phenomena and get off the train. The Krishna conscious person wants the express train past all the temporary cosmic minutiae, past all the temporary cosmic stuff, straight to the spiritual dimensions. And more than that, the Krishna conscious person knows how to bring the spiritual dimension within the realm of matter. That's the most brilliant technology. That's what we actually teach here. Yes. The whole point of Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita is to get you to understand the source of matter and the source of spirit. When you understand the source of these two energies, then you've got everything covered. So when you understand Krishna as the source of all energy, then you also understand the energy. That's the advantage of being Krishna conscious, as opposed to just trying to grope your way through the material energy, trying to figure it all out. And it's endless. And then even you may be aware that there's a spiritual energy, but you don't know what the source of it is. Therefore, you still don't know what to do, even if you're aware that there's an all-pervading spiritual energy. But if you take your knowledge from the source of all the energies, then you know what to do. That is the point of Krishna consciousness. Anything else? All right, we're going to do a little exercise of the vocal cords and our limbs. We'll do a little vibration of the Maha Mantra, chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, and a little stretching of the limbs in joyful dancing. And then after that, we'll, as usual, we'll have our banquet.